First, there was Tuesday. Then, there was Taco Tuesday. Now at Wendy's, there's Takis Tuesday.
Get a new Takis Fuego meal, a.k.a. Takis Fuego Chicken Sandwich, Fuego Fries inspired by Takis, a bag of Takis Fuego Chips, a small drink, and also a small Frosty Classic. Yes, you can get that any day, but on Takis Tuesday, the Frosty is free. Make every Tuesday a Takis Tuesday. Gotta be Wendy's.
Limited time only. Participating U.S. Wendy's includes 1 ounce Takis Fuego Chips while supplies last. Takis and Fuego trademarks are used under license.
Time to talk the latest in the NFL with Sports Illustrated writer and NFL Hall of Fame voter Howard Balzer. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joe Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Back on the bees, Branham's out, Creighton's in, as we get to our man, my favorite, another member of the Killer Bees, Howard Balzer, joining us. And Howard, very much apologetic for the miscommunication yesterday. We love having you on, but it actually turns out better to have you on today. Obviously, the entire football world and NFL world talking about the passing of John Madden. I went out on Twitter this morning, Howard, and I said, Madden is to the NFL and football what Santa Claus is to Christmas. Am I wrong? But in a lot of ways, the more you think about it, I mean, he was that iconic with everything to do with NFL football. Yeah.
No, on so many different levels, and that's a great way of putting it, because the first thought on my mind after you said that was he was the gift that just kept on giving, no matter what it was, as a coach. And there's so many. Yeah, I mean, I'm an old school guy. I've been around for a while, so I do remember when he coached, but there's so many now who don't even think of him or remember that he was a coach, but became so many things. And it's just the thing that hit me when I found out late yesterday, right before, guys, before a local show that I do in Phoenix with a guy named Jim Brinson. And I hate to say this to you. I haven't mentioned it all year. That show's called The Killer Bees.
Oh, geez.
And we actually did a show on a national network like 30 years ago that was called The Killer Bees. So you're in good company. That's
okay.
All right. That's all I can say. But anyway, my first thought when I heard it, so many go through your mind, but I'm thinking that just Sunday night, after the Sunday night game, I had recorded the documentary and watched it, and I said, man, it's just incredible, and they did such a great job with it. I knew John hadn't been, you know, he had some health issues in recent years, but nothing where you thought that something like this was imminent. But I always thought back to the Hall of Fame speech that he made when he was enshrined, and talk about when the lights go off in the Hall of Fame at night for the last time each night. He just has this sense that the busts talk to each other, and I've always remembered that. And but like you said, just so much about him. And then the weird thought I had, and I don't mean to be glib with this, because he was such a guy who was a football guy through and through. He was a football purist. I have a sense that he hasn't liked a lot of the things that are going on in the league with the show must go on and playing these games with a team like Monday night. Mm-hmm. People don't realize it. The Saints activated 14 players from the practice squad on Monday to be able to play in that game Monday night. And four of them, they signed to the practice squad that day to be able to play. And the sadness in my mind was that was the last game in the NFL during John Madden's life. And I have to think that if he was watching that, he didn't really care for it very much. So, but like I said, there's so many things that could be talked about. We could talk about him for hours. But, you know, a tremendous loss to everyone, and, of course, his family, obviously. And but I urge people, if you haven't seen that documentary, make sure you watch it, because, boy, it just ties together his entire life and his career perfectly.
And Howard, as somebody who's been covering the league, like you've been covering the league for, well, I don't know, 40 years, you know, that you've been at the NFL draft. And, you know, so you mean you've been around the game a long time. And you know, John Madden started his broadcasting career in 79. I guess at what point did you think, all right, this guy's got something different? There's something here with John that nobody else brings to the table. Was there a point where, you know, you realized, hey, this guy's really great behind the microphone? Is that something that, you know, you noticed, that other people noticed? Because, like, for me, I grew up, you know, mid-80s, and Pat Summerall and John Madden were on the broadcast nearly every week on the Giants. I didn't recognize as a kid how good I had it.
Right.
Did that light bulb ever go off for you at some point while you were, you know, covering the NFL?
It was pretty immediate, really. And when you think back, too, is that, I mean, you mentioned him starting in 79. That's when he retired after only 10 years as a head coach, and he was only 42 years old, and he had no idea what he was going to do. And he wasn't really enamored with getting into broadcasting because he felt that he didn't like the way the games were presented, and he didn't like a certain amount of it. And he once related a story. He talked about a little bit in the documentary where he told his agent, I'm not even interested unless they let me do it the way I want to do it. And so they signed him up to do like 6 or 7 games his first year, and he just did it the way he wanted to do it. And the network realized they had something, and they let him. And so the rest, obviously, as they say, is history. And with all the networks he worked with, and just you know, he was larger than life. And I don't think there's any doubt about that. But he was able to be himself in the broadcast booth. But still, when he'd go off on one of his little rants or tangents, whatever you want to call it, he still knew that he didn't have a whole lot of time, because in TV you don't have a lot of time. And he was able to be succinct with the way he was describing the game. And that's a gift in itself. And he was able to maintain that through it. And I think the beauty of it, and I remember thinking at times, you know, especially when he'd been doing it for a long time, that he became a master of stating the obvious, but making it sound like it was a revelation.
I also think he simplified some of the most complex portions of the game.
Yeah.
With a telestrator and a delivery that allowed everybody to kind of be open-minded and understand it, as opposed to if it was delivered a different way.
No, I think you're 100% right. And I think, you know, then the whole Madden game thing, mm-hmm, obviously has exposed a lot of people to the way the game is played. And there's so many of us, and so many, you get all these analytics places who purport to be able to rank offensive linemen and rank this guy and that guy, when they don't even know what the individual player's jobs are or responsibilities on a team. But he was able to explain that in a easy to understand manner, which a lot of times they try to stay away from in the booth, because they think, oh, it'll be boring, you won't be able to do it, you don't have time, and viewers don't really want to hear that. Well, I think a lot of viewers do, because it helps the understanding of a game that is somewhat complex in terms of all the plays and all the adjustments. I mean, how many times do we all talk about, oh, that was a bad interception, that was a bad throw, or that was a bad this, or that was a bad decision, when none of us know how many times the quarterback checks off to different plays when he gets to the line of scrimmage. I mean, with Peyton Manning, he knew it sometimes with his Omaha stuff, but even then he didn't know if half the time that was just fake, mm-hmm, to confuse the defense. And so those are the intricacies that go on in the game that are really that most of us don't realize, but then think after a play that we know exactly why it went wrong. But Madden did his best to explain it so everyone would understand.
Howard, as it relates to the Hall of Fame with your expertise, I'm curious, because we talk about, we never know the criteria to get in. And we talk about guys these days, whether it's Eli Manning and should he be or shouldn't he be, or others with the pass happy league now, that from receivers to quarterbacks, it's a different era in terms of how you get in and what stats you have to achieve. You look at Madden, you say he only had one coaching gig in the NFL. He walked away from it, said he'd never coach anywhere else, and he didn't. He was the youngest to win a Super Bowl, and he has a great winning percentage, but he doesn't have that key, you know, total wins in a career number that people look at now. I compare it to maybe Gale Sayers, Barry Sanders, guys that walked away, Calvin Johnson, before they actually put their career to fruition, but had done so much in a short period of time that they were worthy of getting in. Is that how you see Madden as a coach?
No, absolutely. But it's also what kept him out for quite a while. And I shocked some people last year, guys, when Tom Flores got in, mm-hmm. when everyone was talking about, well, look how long he had to wait. How long did he have to wait to get into the Hall of Fame? How crazy is this? And a certain amount of that was driven by the fact that he was in his 80s, and he was an older man when it happened, and he was kind of a little bit not in the greatest of health. Whereas Madden, of course, retired when he was 42, and I looked up this number, and I was a little surprised. John Madden actually waited more years after his last game, one more, than Tom Flores did before he was enshrined. And so, but that's why he had to wait, because of that short career, not the number of championships. But is it his fault that they're always losing to the Steelers? You know, one of the, if not the best, one of the great teams of all time, when they were putting together, winning four Super Bowls in, what was it, six or seven seasons, whatever it was. So they're losing to the Steelers. So should that be a mark against somebody? And I don't think so. But it did take a while for that all to be recognized. I think some people have this misguided notion that when we get in there, we're in the room, that we are affected by the fact, oh, that a guy's on TV or something like that. Well, it certainly doesn't enter my thinking. I don't believe it enters the other selectors. They are doing it just on the basis of what was accomplished. And like you said, in a short period of time, he accomplished a lot, just like Bill Walsh. I mean, Bill Walsh didn't coach that many years. It might have been not too many more than Madden did. Of course, he had a couple more Super Bowls, but he wasn't playing the Steelers every year. So I think all of those things have to be taken into account. And when it comes to criteria, a lot of it is just gut feel. A lot of it is just instinct. Yes, numbers are a part of it, but a large part of it is, hey, who passes the eye test and all that. But it's tough, guys, I'll tell you. In that room every year, and cutting down those lists because it's so close between so many different players. And I'll tell you one thing. I was talking to some people who talked to John a lot, and he bemoaned the Hall of Fame a little bit because he thought it was getting to the point where you had a lot of really, really good players, but maybe not Hall of Famers. But you know what that's driven by? That's driven by the fact that the Hall of Fame has a minimum every year that four guys have to get in. You know, baseball doesn't have that. Mm-hmm. What was it, a year ago or 2 years ago when nobody got to 75% and they didn't have a Hall of Fame class of modern day guys? Well, the NFL Pro Football Hall of Fame is not like that. You have to have four. And so I think that leads to where you are with, like I said, some would argue only the no-brainers should go in. Well, if you did that, you'd have a lot less people in the Hall of Fame, and it's as much about the celebration and the weekend as anything else. And I think that's where we are today with it. But it leads to that question about the criteria. Well, this guy's in, but that guy isn't. His stats were pretty close to being just as good. And you can always make a good case for the guys who aren't in, but I think the guys who have gone in are certainly deserving within the whole framework of how the process operates.
Longtime NFL insider Howard Balzer with us on the HRMP guest line. Howard, you mentioned earlier about John didn't like the type of thing we saw where it was teams got 22 guys who are unavailable, and now you're calling up like an entire practice squad, and you got to sign guys to the practice squad that day, and you get a really diluted, lesser product. The NFL has now changed its COVID guidelines twice in 2 weeks. Do you see that the current one is this? Do you think the current changes more a reaction to what we saw with New Orleans, more a reaction to what's going on in Indy with Carson Wentz, or do you think that this might not even be the last change to the COVID policy in the NFL as it just keeps evolving week after week?
Yeah, that's a great question. The last one, is this the last change? And who knows? And, of course, the last change was in response to what the CDC recommendations of the 10-day isolation or 5 days instead of 10. And so they hope to be able to return guys quicker, especially when they're asymptomatic. And that was a big part of the change right just before that a lot of guys are sitting out there and waiting 10 days or waiting whatever many days, waiting for a negative test, and you can test positive when you don't have symptoms. And so they were saying, is that right? You know, is that the best thing to do? Of course, the flip side to that is that you could be positive, pass it to someone else, who that person gets symptoms, and all of a sudden they're out. Or they're passing it to their family. And so it's kind of complicated. There's so many different layers to it. But the NFL obviously is intent on playing the games. They were certainly taken aback by what started happening a couple of weeks ago. I mean, they've had over 500 positive tests in the last 2 years. I mean, I'm sorry, the last 2 weeks, which is more than double how many positive tests they had all last year. Last year, there was only 262. And it was funny, I posted a number like that on Twitter, and someone said, well, see, this is proof positive what happens when you test more, you get more cases. I said, well, the exact opposite is true, because last year they tested every day, every player, and they only had 262. And so, but it's just the nature of this variant with the Omicron that they felt they had to react to that. Otherwise, you're just going to continue to have games compromised, because their goal is obviously the show must go on. It's not about the integrity of the game in certain places. It's not about player safety. If it was player safety, you wouldn't have these four guys being signed Monday, including one, by the way, guys, a guy named Ethan Westbrook, who since March of 2019, or actually let me say this, at the end of training camp in 2019 when he was cut by the Raiders, he has not had a practice with an NFL team for two entire seasons, not even a practice. Jeez, and all of a sudden he signed on Monday, and he plays 23% of the snaps on defense Monday night. So I'm amazed he wasn't injured. Good for him that apparently he wasn't. But those are the things that are going to happen, and the NFL doesn't want it to. So they're hoping – that's the key here, guys. They're hoping that this will be the last one, and the numbers will go down, and they won't have the final 2 weeks of the season, which, well, this week's going to be compromised, but they won't have next week as much compromise, and certainly in the playoffs. That's what they don't want. Can you imagine if these, well, first of all, the numbers wouldn't be happening in the playoffs because there's not as many teams. But if you had the average per team going on in the postseason, oh my goodness, we shudder to think how games could be affected if all of a sudden on a Thursday, a starting quarterback tests positive before a game. And even there, 5 days, they're not getting back by Saturday or Sunday. So they're just crossing their fingers that something like that doesn't happen when the playoffs roll around.
Longtime NFL insider, Hall of Fame selector, co-host of the weekly Hall of Fame radio show on SiriusXM NFL Radio. Friend of the program, Howard Balzer. Follow him on Twitter at HBalzer721. Howard, always love talking with you. Really appreciate your time today, the insight, especially regarding John Madden and everything that he's meant to the league. Appreciate you, sir.
Thanks, Howard.
Have a great
pleasure,
new
guys.
Year, my
Happy
friend.
Happy New Year.
Same to you. We'll talk again next year. How about that?
That's great.
Howard Balzer with us on the HR&P guest line here on the Killer Bees, also with some great John Madden stories. College football playoff semifinals are Friday and media day today. We'll start with Alabama and Cincy. We'll hear from the Heisman Trophy winner, Bryce Young. We'll hear from Cincinnati's high draft pick expected, Ahmad Gardner. We'll hear from them next.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. Razor-sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, Joel, so CFP semis coming up in just a couple of days. Uh-huh. The two most important college football games until January 10th. We'll start with Alabama and Cincinnati, and for Alabama,
they're the underdog, you know.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Quarterback Bryce Young, Heisman Trophy winner. Does winning the Heisman put more pressure on you? Hey, now that you've won the Heisman, now you got to go out and finish the deal and win the national title. Here's Bryce Young, says, Heisman Trophy, that's not extra pressure.
Being a part of Alabama, that's a place you come for expectations. You understand what it's like. You know, it's not something that's uncommon for us to have expectations, for us to, you know, have whatever hype around our names that we have. But we understand that that doesn't leave us entitled to anything. We have to work as a team. We have to earn everything. Individually, I have to earn everything. And that doesn't change regardless of what's going on and whatever external circumstances may say or may change. For me and for us as a team, we understand we have to earn everything. We have to take everything. And, you know, we're on that push as a team to put ourselves in the best position when it comes to Friday.
Now, I thought that, A, he had a pretty good answer, and B, pretty well spoken, right? Not like, you know.
I thought, A, he was late for study hall, and B, people forget that he's still only a freshman.
That's the crazy part, right?
Right?
You
talk about pressure and all this, and he won the Heisman, and what's the next for pressure? The fact that the kid is only a freshman, that's what gets lost in all of this. Like, he's not supposed to be this good doing this many things to deal with this much pressure this soon, but he already is, so I'm not really that worried about it.
Nobody's supposed to be at this point, right, as right. a freshman. Nobody's supposed to be there. And, yeah, you know what, for the game, especially the game he played against Georgia, which, look, if they don't beat Georgia, maybe they don't make the college football
right.
playoff. They didn't just win. They stomped them. Mm-hmm. You know, Georgia's defense wasn't giving up points all year, and they hung 40-burger on them. So I thought it was a good answer from him in the way that he conducted himself, didn't get nervous, didn't speak too fast, too slow.
He should be great with John McClain's questions at a Texans press conference in a few years.
That's not nice. It's not nice, Joel. It's not nice.
Just saying.
Young also said that he and the leaders on that Crimson Tide team, they've, you know, got the team together, and they are not taking any chances when it comes to COVID.
For us is, you know, as a group, as a leadership group, we had to make a decision that, you know, we weren't going to go anywhere. We weren't going to leave the hotel. We were going to stay, we're going to stay in the hotel to make sure that we could, you know, try to do our best to, try to cancel out, eliminate any COVID possibilities. We can only do that part. But, you know, as a group, as a leadership group and as a team, you know, we all came together and said that we weren't going to leave the hotel room. We're going to practice and we're staying in there. So we understand the realities of, you know, COVID and the modern world we live in. So that was, you know, the decision we all made. And, you know, it's a sacrifice, but at the end of the day, that's what we have to do to, you know, put ourselves in the best position.
Eyes on the prize.
Sharp kid. I mean, Davis Mills went to Stanford. This kid went somewhere. I mean, he's at Alabama, but holy cow, he was brought up with some kind of a hell of a high school and some great upbringing from some parents, because, man, he is well-spoken.
Or well-coached, or both.
Both, right? I mean, and the fact of the matter is, in, what, a year or two, all you're going to hear is, Bryce, how did Bill O'Brien's coaching bring you to the point where you're a quarterback for the Houston Texans?
I'm not Brock Osweiler. Bang, winner!
Small sample size, Pat. Small sample size.
Now that being said, you go on the other side of Cincinnati, and Ahmad Gardner, who's projected to be a first-round pick coming out of Cincinnati, he doesn't think the Bearcats are underdogs.
From the inside out, we don't see ourselves as underdogs. We feel like we could play with whoever. But from the outside in, everybody going to see us as an underdog. It's not saying that those opinions matter, but we just know what it is and what we have to do. And that way we just keep pushing each other so we can, you know, go out and handle the task at hand.
Now, I never understood the "it doesn't matter, so let me talk about it anyway" type argument. But it is interesting. And look, they're undefeated. The only team they've played that was a top team was Notre Dame. And they beat Notre Dame on the road. Good win. Alabama's a totally different animal to me. Am I looking at it through, like, you know, biased glasses of what Alabama's been and you know, what they are, and think, look, Alabama just, they smash people. That's what they do. They just smash Georgia. Or should I be looking at it more through, like, the eyes of Ahmad Gardner and saying, hey, we're 13-0. I don't afraid of anybody.
I mean, I look at this and I say, the matchup to me is just, it's so heavily in favor of Alabama. It's crazy. And that's not to take away from anything, like you mentioned, from Cincinnati's perspective. They beat U of H, a ranked team. They beat Notre Dame, a ranked team. But I don't think Notre Dame on its best day And we've seen this when Notre Dame's gotten to the playoff in the past to play other Alabama teams. Alabama's just a different animal. Alabama is, their second string are going to be, if you just took all their second stringers and put them together on a roster, they'd probably be a top 25 team. And if you went to the third string, they'd probably be a bottom third of one of the power fives. I mean, that's just what Alabama does. That's how deep they are. That's the talent that they possess. Now, they had a freshman quarterback. They had a new offensive coordinator. They had a lot of turnover, which they normally do from year to year because of the NFL. But at the same time, I am in complete agreement with you that, look, we love the parity in college football this year, and part of it was because Alabama wasn't what Alabama was, and that there was a chance Alabama wasn't going to be the number one seed or get into the playoff at all. The fact that they're there, sitting where they are, and have done what they've done recently tells me that I don't care how good Cincinnati is. I don't give them – everybody has a chance. I just don't see them winning the game.
No, and they're 13.5-point dogs. And as Gardner says here, you know, if Cincy could pull this off, this is absolutely an historic win.
It would be a big win, especially coming in as the underdog. I've never been on a stage this big. I've been to championships in like my younger days, but never won like this, obviously. It would mean a lot for the program and for the world to be able to show the world what we're able to do.
For all the blowouts that we've gotten in CFP semifinal games, for the first G5 school to get into the CFP and then knock off, you know, perennial powerhouse defending champion, you know, multiple time champion just in the last, you know, what they've won, what, 5-6 titles in the last 12 years, to beat that team and not get run out the building as a G5 school, it's absolutely an historic win.
Oh, look, it would be almost the equivalent of, I'm trying to think of the biggest upset. Is it Villanova or Georgetown? Villanova, Georgetown, or in basketball, or, you know, one of the biggest upsets in college sports.
Because, UMBC beating Virginia.
But not on the same stage, right? If we were talking about a Final Four.
Right.
Like, say, for instance, if Gordon Hayward's shot goes in for Butler from half court to beat Duke, and Butler wins the national championship, it's that magnitude. If Cincinnati beats Alabama, regardless of what they do in the championship game, just the fact that they would have beaten David beating Goliath, all the things that people look at and say, it would be monumental in college football.
It's the intrigue of the, you know, the Cinderella story of Cincinnati gives the game a lot of appeal. That is the first half of the CFP. The later game, Michigan and Georgia, will hear from some of their players coming up next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5.
This is Ed Too Tall Jones, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5.
You.
You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Patch straight in for Jeremy Branham. Looks like Joel Blank, Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5. Just talking about that game between Alabama and Cincinnati. Well, that's the early game. Then you got the late game, which will be Georgia and Michigan. Now, as I said, Alabama, 13.5-point favorites in their game. This game between Georgia and Michigan, Georgia, 7.5-point favorite over the Wolverines. And Michigan has been a team where all year long, you know, was Jim Harbaugh on the hot seat? A lot of talk about, you know, hey, is Harbaugh ever going to beat Ohio State? What are they going to be? And this is the year where Harbaugh finally breaks through, finally beats Ohio State, gets into the CFP. Now here he is playing Georgia, who'd been the number one team for a good portion of the season, really up until the SEC title game. And DJ Turner, defensive back for Michigan, said, it's always been Michigan against the world this year.
I love Coach Harbaugh,
And we always knew since day one it was Michigan versus everybody. And we live by that. And so that's why when we proved everything and just we got a lot to do more left. And it just feels great to, you know, do it with my coach too.
Now, Joel, a lot of teams do the it's us against the world, and not surprised that Jim Harbaugh would be doing such a thing. But I feel, you know, Michigan, definitely not the most talented team in the Big Ten.
No.
Yet they somehow find ways to grind things out. They mm-hmm. outwork, out-hustle, out-hit, more physical. Is that something that's all a reflection of that type of attitude?
It is, and because a lot of people hate Harbaugh regardless. And there's a lot of hatred from the Harbaugh perspective that makes you hate Michigan. But when you look at it, and I look at this game, it's the marquee matchup of the two games, obviously. But I think that very similarly, their offenses are not anything to write home about. I think that this is a game that's going to be determined in the trenches because Georgia, as everybody knows, has the best defense in the country. And it's not even close. And what they're able to do defensively is amazing, but it makes up for the shortcomings that they have offensively. They've used two quarterbacks. They've used a quarter game in games. They've used two quarterbacks in a game. They haven't really figured out what they're doing from a consistency standpoint from a quarterback or offensive position. But we know the one thing they're going to come to the table with every single week is defense. From a Michigan perspective, they own the offensive and defensive lines. We already know that the Wolverine Watt, as Cody calls them, is a man child in himself on the edge for Michigan, but their defensive line is stout, and the things that they're able to do defensively is really good. Offensively, their offensive line are a bunch of beasts, and so they run the football right. They play smash mouth football. They run it right down your throat. But that's where Georgia can step up and stand up to them and say, "We'll take everything you got there. We're going to make you pass the football." And then, by the way, we've got a good secondary too. So I think you're right. There was more talent on Ohio State's team. You see that with just the draft prospects and the fact that with two receivers that are going to be in the top 10, possibly, taken in this year's draft, falling out of the Rose Bowl. We just talked about Alabama. Well, the one thing that Bryce Young was able to do that they weren't able to do at Ohio State was take a young quarterback and get him ready to be able to step up at the right time of the year to be able to do what they needed to do to get back to where they've been consistently. And therefore, it opened the door. Michigan stepped in. It's not anybody's fault. Michigan, it deserves to be there. They won the head-to-head.
When you get into these single elimination type games, you know, being able to know your opponent, their strengths, their weaknesses, very important matchups, much more focused on. Now when you're talking about, you know, one game to rule them all, but Mazi Smith, Michigan defensive lineman, says they're not focused on Georgia. They're focused on themselves.
We ain't too worried about Georgia's defense or what they do. We are worried about what we do, and we ain't necessarily worried. We just focus, because that's the only way we're going to play championship-level ball. So as far as, like Chris said, we kind of block out all that outside noise and worry about what we got to do, focus on what we got to do, and get our jobs done.
So they're coached up well, too.
I was going to say, do you take that as, you know, he's silly enough to think, well, what they do doesn't matter, or I'm going to give a non-answer that I've been practiced and rehearsed. That's
exactly right.
And I'm not going to put anything controversial out there.
It's exactly what it is. And we go to the David Culley philosophy of note cards. Somewhere along the line, both sides have been very well versed in the note cards and what to say and what not to say. And let's not provide any billboard material. And let's just handle our business when we hit the field. That's the way it's supposed to be done. Because when you look at it, this is the matchup that everybody wants to see. And everybody's going to want to see it. It's not going to be, I don't believe it's going to be a high scoring affair. I don't believe it's going to be, you know, throw the ball all over the lot and run up the scoreboard. This is going to be determined by the O lines and the D lines and two really stout defenses, and which defense can perform better, create turnovers, and really become more of a factor in the game. That's what it's going to come down to. This is old school smash mouth football at its finest from both schools, because it's all about their defenses first and foremost, and it's all about the line of scrimmage.
Now, for the Bulldogs, they're coming off their only loss of the season. They got pounded by Alabama in the SEC title game. They find themselves mired with a quarterback controversy, and quarterback Stetson Bennett says he's not hearing anything about the Dogs and their quarterback situation.
Like I've said before, if you listen to them when they're telling you how good they are, then you're going to listen to them whenever they tell you how bad you are. And I don't really care what anybody else says. My job is to go out every single day, build chemistry with these guys, watch film enough to be prepared for when the game comes. And that's the only thing I'm worried about.
Considering Georgia's season and now at the very end, there's this, you know, quarterback controversy. I feel like, you know, they've made the decision. They're going to go with Stetson Bennett. It's on his shoulders. He better deliver a win.
Well, no question. I mean, especially coming off what happened against Alabama, especially coming off everything that I just said about the uncertainties that go with what is certain for Georgia's defense, what is uncertain is their offense, and especially their quarterback or quarterbacks. So, again, everybody's saying all the right things, but it all comes down to how you play in the playoff, and let's just take the field and see how it goes. This is unlike what we've seen in recent history from college football, when we had explosive programs, when we had complete programs, when we had powerhouse programs that were head and shoulders above everybody else in the country. This is parity. This is about, it's anybody's ball game. And as much as Cincinnati probably has the least chance of any of the four schools, the other three schools almost have equal chance. Maybe you give Alabama a slight nod, but they still have a freshman quarterback too, and they still have Bill O'Brien as a fresh offensive coordinator, and they still have a bunch of new kids all over the place, to where this isn't the Alabama of old, and this isn't a slam dunk they're going to win it all. And all three other schools, all four schools firmly believe, but three other schools legitimately, in my mind, have a chance to win this whole thing.
Georgia running back Zamir White says the Dogs have moved on from the beating they took in the SEC title game. Yeah, and look, they got housed. That defense had not gotten beat up like that all year long. Their offense has been hit and miss. But, you know, when you're undefeated and this is supposed to be the year you take down Alabama and you get smashed like that, that can be hard to overcome. White says Dogs have moved on.
I personally feel like that's just part of the game. When you're winning, fans and stuff like that love you. But it's just part of it, man. Just keep going and just keep on being positive. Just keep on grinding and practicing real hard and just know what your team is worth and just go out there and just play. So yes, sir. That's just really.
I had flashbacks to Bedazzled and Brendan Fraser as the 7-foot-tall offensive, superstar center going, you play good, you win good, we work hard. You have to have the mindset that you moved on. But I think that's a tough game to move on from.
I don't. I really don't. I think it's tougher for them if there's a rematch.
All right, well, one more segment to go in the show before Cody Stutz, Brad Keldner, and the Wheelhouse come your way, and we'll hear some more from John Madden and some more stories on him and great stuff, the stuff about Troy Aikman. This is a good one. You'll enjoy this one. It's coming up next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5.
Before we go to the break, tell you about New Brakes. Look, I'm a big believer in New Brakes. It's the new way that everybody's getting their brakes fixed, and all the listeners that have taken my advice that have gotten in contact with New Brakes and had them fix their brakes feel the same way. It is the end-all, be-all for how you should get your brakes done because of the fact that you save time by saving money by having them come to you to do what they do, and that is just brakes. They are skilled technicians. All they do is brakes. But unlike all the other ways that you get your brakes done where you have to go to a brake shop or a mechanic, you're spending hours upon hours in a waiting room with bad coffee, cold seats, awkward, bad television, and you're wasting a lot of time, they come to you to do what they do. It's like getting your groceries curbside or delivered to the house instead of shopping for an hour. It's the same concept, only it's the better half of getting your brakes done because they have competitive prices with any brake shop in town, skilled technicians that only do brakes and don't try to upsell you on anything else, and they're in and out in less than an hour while you're doing other things. They come to your job like they did mine when I was doing the show. They were fixing my brakes, and it took less than 40 minutes. They come to the house. You could be cutting the lawn, drinking a beer, watching a game. They're fixing your brakes. And they do a fantastic job. Their ratings are unbelievable. But better than anything else, they take care of you every step of the way. Check them out today. NUBreaks.com. That's NUBreaks.com. Mention ESPN 97.5. Save 10%. But more than that, you save time. And saving time is saving money. Check them out. NUBreaks.com.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Hey, you notice Pat Troy Aikman's trying to grow a beard, and he just can't do it. I mean, you know, the blonde-haired guys, a lot of them have trouble, but I can't even. I'm looking as close as I can, and I can't see any beard, but he's been. That's a four-day beard, isn't it?
It's a passive attempt.
It's very, very passive.
Here's Terry Allen. Out to about the 20. There it is.
You know, here it is. But see, I mean, he got a little in here and a little up there. Here, but he doesn't have anything here at all. Watch, when you take it off, he doesn't have anything going up in there.
Well, you got to give him time. He just had his 29th birthday.
I know, but I don't think he's doing a very good. I'd quit.
Joel, John Madden, to me, more associated with the coach's clicker than anybody else. And the first person that I can remember with the clicker and going back and forth and drawing all over the screen.
Telestrator. Right,
yeah. And he's drawing lines around Troy Aikman's face as he's talking about this. Yep. Say, look, he's got no hair. He's got a little bit here, and he draws a circle. He's got nothing all the way over here, and he's drawing a big... I thought that was really funny.
Well, you
got
to watch the documentary because they get Aikman to watch the clip. And then comment on it.
Oh, that's going to be great.
And it's fantastic. And then, Tyler, like I said, we were probably watching it at the same time last night because people forget that the other notoriety of the many for John Madden was he introduced the nation to the turducken. And it, as part of the documentary, in Detroit for Thanksgiving Day, and Madden gets word of the turducken, and he finds out one of the companies that makes it, and they order one, and they deliver it as part of the telecast, and they deliver it to Madden, and he's so infatuated by it, so enthralled by it, that he wants them to do it again and again and again. And the guy just talks about the fact that, and Madden being Madden too, he didn't care that they started to advertise home of the John Madden turducken, but the guy just goes off and says, like, our business went, like, through the roof and got this many orders, then this many orders, then this many orders. And then there's Madden who talks about the fact that because it's boneless and he's digging in with his hands and he's eating it all. And it was just part of that overall mystique of Madden and the fact that it wasn't just about football, but it was like entertainment. I said that in the tweet, but he's like your favorite uncle. Like, he's just everybody's favorite uncle. He's funny. He can be a bit, sometimes he can be a little crass, but he's smart. He knows his stuff. And it doesn't matter what's on the table. He can talk about it.
Yeah, the uncle who tells you how cool he is, but he actually is cool.
And I don't think he tells you. He also was very, very non-egotistical. He was always deflecting. I don't think he ever really was. I don't remember, recall a moment where Madden was all about Madden. Do you?
I don't. And that's part of the charm of Madden is the fact that, you know, without making it about him, all the attention is on him. And he didn't ask for it. It's just that's how it went. Pat Summerall and John Madden worked together for 21 years. And nobody probably knew him better as far as work co-workers, etc., than Pat Summerall did. And this is Pat Summerall introducing John Madden at an awards banquet in 1998. And it gives you an idea of how much appreciation they had for each other. Pat Summerall talking about John Madden.
I was looking for some way to introduce John on the way out here. I flew out from Philadelphia this morning, and I ran across a quote by the legendary Norman Vincent Peale, who said, ultimately, we're all going to meet our maker, and we're going to have to answer just one question. What did you do with what you were given? And I wonder how many of us could say I got the most out of the ability that I was given. Well, the man I'm about to introduce to you now, John Madden, has gotten the most out of the ability he was given, no question about it. I don't know how many people can say that. He's the best there is. He's the best there ever was. And he is the best there ever will be. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the great John Madden.
Wow. Was that?
It's a hell of an intro. Ooh,
baby. That was as good as it gets right there. And he wasn't wrong. That's why I said, I want you to watch the doc. And I hope you have a chance to watch it tonight, maybe, and we can talk about it tomorrow. But the amazing thing to me is, it's somewhere all talks about when you the day we're going to meet our maker. But I think we all at some point or another in our lives will think about, what's my funeral going to be like? What are people going to say about me when I'm gone? Madden actually got to experience it. Because the people at Fox were very adamant in the last 24 hours in saying John Madden was able to watch the entire documentary. John Madden was able to hear what all these greats had to say about him. And just being him, watching that and thinking about what was going through his mind, was it just had to be amazing and a bit eerie all at the same time. Because I'm watching it after he's gone last night, but thinking about it, the fact that it aired before he died.
I am so looking forward to watching this tonight.
You're going
to
love it.
After, you know, everything we've talked about today, and then the fact that you were able to actually watch it and now kind of tell me, oh, hey, these are some of the different things that you're going to see. I am so excited for this. Back tomorrow at noon. Of course, we'll talk with former Rockets head coach Kevin McHale tomorrow. Cody Stoops, Brad Kellner, Wheelhouse in next ESPN 97.5.
ESPN 97.5.